Today is Wednesday, August 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington.
It's simply a calamity after calamity. It's catastrophic.
With more than 100 dead and 4,000 injured after a massive explosion in Beirut Tuesday, international aid is on the way to those in need. Plus, a look at the impact the crisis will have on an already stressed country.
It's a tough month in August for Lebanon, and this is another major blow for the Lebanese economy.
We'll have these stories and more next. That's the sound of one of the two blasts in Beirut, Lebanon, Tuesday that has left at least 100 people dead and more than 4,000 injured. Experts and video footage suggest that fireworks and ammonium nitrate ignited the blast. The scale of the damage, from the epicenter of the explosion at the port of Beirut to the windows blown out kilometers away, resembles other blasts involving the chemical compound commonly used as an agricultural fertilizer. However, the exact cause has yet to be determined. Lebanese President Michel Aoun called for an emergency cabinet meeting on Wednesday and said a two-week state of emergency should be declared. Countries around the world have been paying tribute to the victims of the two deadly blasts and offering humanitarian assistance to Lebanon, especially France. French President Emmanuel Macron is going to travel to Lebanon on Thursday to offer support. Nicolas Pinot has more from Paris.
Two French military planes are scheduled to arrive Wednesday in Beirut with more than 20 metric tons of material to assist humanitarian efforts on the ground. 100 French firefighters and civil security personnel will also be deployed to assist their Lebanese counterparts who have been operating around the clock since the blast occurred Tuesday night. Among them will be specialists in post-disaster rubble clearing and a dozen emergency personnel who will reinforce hospitals in the Lebanese capital, said the French presidency. In the United States, the State Department stands ready to offer all possible assistance, a spokesperson said. Even Israel, which is still technically at war with Lebanon, offered humanitarian assistance. And Qatar said it will send field hospitals to support Lebanon's medical response. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
Patricia Muammar lives in Beirut and shares this first-person account.
Well, it was a very scary moment, to be honest. As a Lebanese, I couldn't help but, you know, in a moment like this where you hear that explosion sound, I thought maybe the war broke again, as a Lebanese having lived the war twice already in my life. It was a very scary moment. I kneeled immediately and I started praying, and then I was not knowing what to do. I waited for a few seconds until I tried to escape. I was about to leave, it was a rush hour, so people were getting ready to leave their offices and head home when this happened. You know, I'm like 4 kilometers away from the explosion almost, and you could feel it was like next door. And they were saying that the radius is 7 kilometers still, where you could feel and hear and see what happened. True, dozens have died and thousands injured. The hospitals are overwhelmed with hundreds of people in each hospital. There are surgery happening outside OR rooms, and doctors are treating people outdoor. It's simply a calamity after calamity. It's catastrophic.
Joe Macaron, a fellow at the Arab Center in Washington, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the explosion and its impact on the severity of the Lebanese political and economic crisis.
The explosions in Beirut, as you said, is reportedly due to nitrates that was combined with electrical shock. It's not clear exactly what happened now, why this huge amount of nitrates were in the port in the beginning, and what happened at this moment. But what we know is the port of Beirut is a black hole of corruption and cartels sanctioned by the political leaders. And this is one of the failings of the system. There's no basically parliamentary supervision of what's happening inside the port. It's endorsed and protected by high political officials in Lebanon, especially the son-in-law of the president. So there's a failure of the system once again, but but this is at the bigger level. What we are seeing in Lebanon is like a mini Hiroshima, basically. A complete destruction of the infrastructure of buildings, at least 30 deaths, with over 2,500 injuries. So it's another indication of the failure of the system, and there should be a clear, I think, investigation and a clear transparency of what happened.
The timing of the explosion coincided with an imminent court ruling expected on Friday regarding the assassination of the late Prime Minister Rafiq al-Hariri. Does that raise any red flags?
I don't see yet an indication that in that regard. Obviously, August is a very tough month for Lebanon. You have the tensions between Israel and Hezbollah. You have on August 7 the ruling of tribunal, but we are not expecting any big surprise on the ruling. And I don't see any real connection in that sense, but we never know. It's hard to predict what happens in Lebanon. We don't know all the facts of the investigation. So I know there are many things happening in Lebanon. People will have a lot of conspiracy theories, but for now, at least, I don't see any link to a political, a specific political issue.
So how would such a massive explosion add to the severity of the Lebanese political and economic crisis?
It's a big blow. The port of Beirut is a key revenue for the Lebanese government. It will be out of service for a long time now. The imagery there is devastating. So I don't see it functional anytime soon. We already had coronavirus. We have a financial collapse, economic collapse. There's a need of billions of dollars now to basically reconstruct some of these areas, to give some of the help for the people. The Lebanese government, the Lebanese state don't have any money. We might see now some international support coming in the coming days and months. We already heard from France or other government. I'm only worried on one thing, that the Lebanese ruling elites will take this money to sustain their influence instead of taking it as a waking up moment to do reforms, to investigate, to tell the people what happened. And I don't want to see, or no Lebanese want to see, that back to business as usual in the next weeks or months without clear investigation of what happened, why those exploded, who's responsible, and what we can do to prevent this moving forward. It's a tough month in August for Lebanon, and this is another major blow for the Lebanese economy.
That was Arab Center fellow Joe Macaron speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. And coming up later...
There is nothing in the law and practice of CFIUS up until this point that suggests that the American government should get a cut of anything.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Mars has two tiny moons, Phobos and Deimos. Scientists from the SETI Institute and Purdue University have written a study that proposes for Deimos to have its strange tilted orbit. Mars had to be circled billions of years ago by a ring like those around the giant planets. While Deimos migrated outward, Phobos is being pulled toward the surface of Mars. It's expected that as Phobos draws nearer to Mars, gravity will break the tiny moon into little pieces that will go on to form a new ring around the red planet. The scientists propose in time those ring segments will reconstitute itself back into a smaller moon. The study author suggests that Mars had generations of moons that would cycle into rings and back to moons. They offer that a ring made from a former moon pushed Deimos on its outward path, and after several moon-to-ring cycles, went on to form Phobos. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The COVID-19 global pandemic has claimed more than 700,000 lives across the globe, according to Johns Hopkins University statistics. To date, the U.S. university's tracker counts over 18.5 million confirmed cases and 11.1 million recoveries. The World Health Organization is reporting a threefold rise in the number of cases of COVID-19 among young people during the past 5 months, blaming the jump on a lack of attention to social distancing. The Global Health Agency reports that 15% of the 6 million cases that emerged between late February and mid-July were in people between 15 and 24 years of age. Before late February, the number was only 4.5%. Health experts say young people tend to be less likely to wear masks and follow physical distancing rules. They also are more likely to go to their jobs, to the beach, a bar, or shopping. The United States continues to top the world in the number of cases and is fast approaching another dismal virus pandemic milestone. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has that part of the story.
There are now more than 4.7 million confirmed infections in America, and with more than 60,000 new cases per day, the nation may hit 5 million over the weekend. More than 155,000 Americans have died, and President Trump tells Fox Business Network, we're going to lose more. He's been touting what he calls a great job by his administration in handling the pandemic and says the U.S. is coming back. But an AP analysis shows the average number of COVID-19 deaths per day the past 2 weeks is up by nearly 300. Cases are rising in 26 states, deaths in 35 states. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Greece has recorded its biggest spike in COVID-19 infections since emerging from a nationwide lockdown 3 months ago. The country's virus-free status, relative to others in Europe, has largely faded since allowing tourists to visit again. But now authorities are largely blaming young Greeks for the dramatic rise in infections, accusing them of socializing recklessly and not acting responsibly. Anthony Karasava reports on the surging health crisis and how officials fear Greece is just weeks away from living a nightmarish contagion, much like that already seen in Italy earlier this year.
For a country that had until recently only about 3,000 COVID-19 infections, Tuesday's single count of 121 new cases set off alarm bells. It also forced Sotiris Tsiodras, an infectious diseases expert and the head of the Greek government's medical response team, to return to the public podium, issuing a stark warning 70 days after Greece claimed it had successfully flattened its coronavirus curve. The situation now, he says, is dangerous, and Greeks have to understand the severity of it because the fate of this flare-up ultimately hinges upon them. If people behave as they should, Mr. Tsiodras says, then they can once again quash the curve. But if they do not, then this can easily and quickly turn into what he described as an Italian-like calamity. COVID-19 infections have been climbing since tourists began trickling back into the sun-drenched country in early June. But as Greeks too have started seeking summer retreat, they also have been loosening up in their compliance with social distancing rules, refusing to wear masks at beach bars, restaurants, and social gatherings. Homegrown cases have overtaken foreign ones. State statistics released Wednesday suggested only 10% of Greece's COVID-19 cases are linked to tourism. To stem the spread, authorities have introduced a new list of measures, including a cap on large weddings and celebrations that officials say have contributed to the dramatic rise in COVID-19 cases here. They have also implemented tighter border controls, mainly from Albania, where the pandemic shows no signs of abating. But reining in Greece's beach-partying youth is proving more difficult. Greek Civil Protection Minister Nikos Kardalias is now calling on people in their 20s, 30s and 40s to socialize responsibly, not recklessly. He says that as a father, he appeals to the youth to step up to the plate and to take the lead in protecting Greece and what it has managed to achieve in these past few months in keeping itself clear of the virus. The youth, he says, should now act as young heroes, protecting their families, parents and grandparents. But to officials, it appears that young people are not doing that. Islands like Mykonos and Ios are buzzing with beach parties, defying stiff regulations and steep fines for those failing to observe rules that require them to remain seated at bars, open-air nightclubs and concerts. It is no wonder, health experts say, that the average age of cases here has now dropped from 72 to 52, with the slide slipping more and more into younger age groups traveling around the country during summer break. Charalla Bozogogos is a doctor advising the state government's response. He explains that the alarming element in this flare-up is the speed with which it is spreading. It has doubled, he says, in just a matter of days. Any further rise from this point on, he warns, will spell an unchecked pandemic. He says it's imperative to keep the rate and pace of the infections down. With Greece's economy largely dependent on tourism, government officials say they do not want to resort to a new nationwide lockdown, fearing it could scare travelers and business away. Antti Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
A series of explosions rocked a North Korean city near the border with China this week, according to multiple reports, resulting in possible casualties. Neither North Korean officials nor state media have commented on the blast, which reportedly occurred late Monday in a residential area in the city of Haesan. Egypt and Sudan have suspended talks with Ethiopia after it proposed linking a deal on its new reservoir and hydroelectric dam to a broader agreement about the Blue Nile waters to replace a colonial-era accord with Britain. The African Union-led talks among the three key Nile Basin countries are trying to resolve a years-long dispute over Ethiopia's construction of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on the Blue Nile. The colonial-era deal effectively prevents upstream countries from taking any action, such as building dams and filling reservoirs, that would reduce the share of the Nile's water to the downstream countries, Egypt and Sudan. Greek police say a car believed to be transporting migrants who recently entered the country has crashed into roadworks on a highway, killing 7 people and injuring 5. Police say the crash occurred just before 1 a.m. local time outside the northeastern city of Alexandroupolis. Thousands of migrants head to Greece from nearby Turkey, most hoping to make their way to more prosperous European countries farther north. U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar will visit Taiwan in the coming days, according to his office, marking the highest level visit by a U.S. official in 4 decades, a move likely to anger China, which claims the island as its own. Reuters' Gloria So reports.
As of this morning,
top U.S. official Alex Azar is set to visit Taiwan in the coming days, a move that will likely anger China, which claims the island as its own. It will mark the highest level visit to Taiwan by a U.S. official in 4 decades and is likely to further inflame worsening U.S.-China relations. Azar, the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, will meet with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen during his visit, said the island's foreign ministry. The ministry added that the visit showed firm U.S. support for Taiwan and the closeness of their relationship. In a statement, Azar said, quote, "I look forward to conveying President Trump's support for Taiwan's global health leadership and underscoring our shared belief that free and democratic societies are the best model for protecting and promoting health." Despite having won global praise for its response to the pandemic, Taiwan is not a member of the World Health Organization due to Chinese objections. Beijing considers the island merely one of China's provinces. Taiwan has expressed gratitude for U.S. support during the pandemic as it seeks meaningful access to the WHO. Like most countries, however, the U.S. has no formal diplomatic ties with Taiwan, having ditched Taipei in favor of Beijing in 1979. But the U.S. is still Taiwan's main arms supplier and strongest backer on the international stage. U.S. President Donald Trump signed a new law in March requiring increased support for Taiwan's international role, to which China threatened unspecified retaliation in response.
That was Reuters reporter Gloria So. U.S. President Donald Trump suggested if the planned sale of TikTok goes through to the Microsoft Corporation, the government should get a cut.
Whatever the price is, that goes to whoever owns it, because I guess it's China, essentially, but more than anything else. I said a very substantial portion of that price is going to have to come into the Treasury of the United States, because we're making it possible for this deal to happen.
Martin Chorzempa is a research fellow at the Peterson Institute of International Economics, and he explains why that can't take place.
CFIUS stands for the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And essentially what it is a group of chaired by the Treasury Department of the United States government, but also including defense and other areas. And the idea is that they review any investment by a foreigner into American businesses that they think might harm national security. CFIUS only has jurisdiction when a U.S. business is purchased. And in the TikTok case, it relates to ByteDance's acquisition of Musical.ly in 2017, which was an American business that was being bought by a foreign business. So that's ultimately the source of the jurisdiction here. If Microsoft is buying TikTok, Microsoft being an American company, it would not be subject to CFIUS jurisdiction.
So then when the president comes out and says if Microsoft is allowed to go through and purchase ByteDance, which is operating TikTok here, and the Treasury should get a big cut of that sale, where does that fall in the jurisdiction and the purview of CFIUS?
It falls nowhere in the purview of CFIUS. There is nothing in the law and practice of CFIUS up until this point that suggests that the American government should get a cut of anything. It's only supposed to be focused on mitigation of national security concerns. It's not about making a buck. CFIUS is authorized to collect a fee that's only supposed to be covering its costs so that the taxpayer is not shouldering the cost of the personnel that are reviewing this.
Martin Torzampa is a research fellow with the Peterson Institute of International Economics. And you've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of news and world events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Cybercrime and cyber-enabled crime are among the fastest-growing security threats in the world. The COVID-19 pandemic has only made the situation worse. According to the FBI, since the coronavirus pandemic was declared, cybercrime has increased by some 400%. Cyber intrusions are becoming more commonplace, more dangerous, and more sophisticated, and target both private and public sector networks. Businesses and companies are targeted for trade secrets and sensitive data. Universities and laboratories are targeted for research and development, while private citizens are victimized by fraudsters and identity thieves. In late July, the U.S. Department of State announced rewards of up to $1 million each for information leading to the arrests or convictions of Ukrainian nationals Artem Vyacheslavovich Rachenko and Oleksandr Vitalievich Yeremenko. Both are suspected of participating in transnational organized cybercrime. Based on an investigation of their activities, Rachenko and Yeremenko have been accused of hacking into the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's electronic data gathering, analysis, and retrieval system, and indicted for securities fraud conspiracy, wire fraud conspiracy, computer fraud conspiracy, wire fraud, and computer fraud. The 16-count indictment alleges that the two hackers stole thousands of confidential files, which were then illegally sold for profit. The Securities and Exchange Commission has also filed a civil complaint charging Yeremenko and other individuals and entities. This reward offer was made under the State Department's Transnational Organized Crime Rewards Program, which together with the Narcotics Rewards Program has brought some 75 transnational criminals to justice since these programs began in 1986. Any information regarding these cyber criminals should be sent to the U.S. Secret Service by email at rewards@USSS.DHS.gov. Cybercriminals do not observe nor respect the rule of law in any country. As their criminal reach is worldwide, we welcome the cooperation and coordination of all governments to bring these criminals to justice and protect innocent citizens throughout the world, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in a written statement. The United States is committed to that effort in part through the State Department's Transnational Organized Crime Rewards Program to help our law enforcement partners bring cyber and other transnational criminals to justice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.